Hello and welcome to A Tale of Two Counties, and we're bringing you a bonus episode to this first series today. It's a bit of a Christmas special. I think, Matt, you've got a Christmas jumper on.
I have, mate. Yeah, welcome everybody. Merry Christmas. Got the jingly bells on, got the Christmas jumper on. Yeah, got to get in the spirit, not like you, Scrooge.
Bar humbug.
Bar humbug there, yeah. No, get in the Christmas spirit.
You can't see this, but I've got a really festive backdrop at Snowy Park behind me, because we did get a dusting over the weekend.
Dusting? You've probably been baking. There's no evidence on a podcast of anything visual, Charlie, so I don't believe you. But yes, Christmas jumpers on and excited for Christmas. Buzzing, in fact. And we've got some guests as well today, so that also gives us something else to kind of get excited about. So yeah, really, really up for it, mate. Have you done all your Christmas shopping?
Some. I'd say I'm 50% there, which is good. It's a good effort. I'm not panicked yet.
Yeah. And obviously, as you can imagine, I'm done.
Yeah, because organized. your wife's done it, I expect.
Well, hey, I've got to be careful here what I say, because my daughter has started listening.
Oh.
Now, I don't know. Have I mentioned this to you before?
New fan.
She's a new fan. I think it might be why our viewing figures are going up. However, viewing figures, listening figures, she's putting it on at night time to fall asleep to. So how strange was it last week when I found out? I walked into the room and I can hear you talking to my daughter, like, what's going on here? Hey, this is weird. And there she was with the Alexa going, and she's listening in.
So I'm trying not to be offended. I don't know whether to celebrate the fact that we've got another listener or that we've actually created a sleep podcast, which is not what we intended this to be, but hey, We'll take the listen. There we go.
So
what our listeners do need to know, Matt, is, have you bought your daughter a new pencil? Because on the last episode, you snapped your pencil.
Well, if she's listening, she'll know it's Christmas, won't she? So I can't tell you.
Can't
that.
Say. Okay.
No. But yes, I did snap a pencil, and yeah, I did get in trouble. So no fidgeting from me today. Just these jingle bells. There we go.
Good. Couldn't hear them.
Didn't you hear them?
No.
No, they're in the
broken
background.
Okay, we need to move to our feature, because we've run this feature now for a few weeks and it would be amiss not to have it at the bonus episode. So, without any hesitation, give us a stat, Matt.
Give us a stat. Right, so if you've got an opportunity to bang on your dashboard, I'll give us a drum roll. The current download figure stands at 2,626. Fanfare, hurrah. But where the stat gets really interesting is, you will have heard us mention around not conquering Australia. Yeah. 6 downloads in Australia last month.
Wow.
So good day, mate, to all of our Australian friends. Thank you, Sean, who I went to university with, who is listening down in Sydney. So yes, superb. I bet their Christmas is a bit different.
Yeah, barbecues on the beach.
Barbecues, and they'll not have any snow outside their windows, will they?
No.
So there you are. How's that for stats? Hey, end of year.
That's an excellent one. I'm really pleased, because I was sad that our Australian friends hadn't listened. So that's great.
It's a start.
We'll hopefully grow that audience.
But if you think back to, Charlie, when we first started and we said, well, if we could get 42 people to listen, one from each of the active partnerships across the country, then that would probably be us doing a good job to try and help. So hopefully for those people, they've heard us and it's been helpful. And what we've got today might just add a little bit of extra Christmas magic, but a bit of extra.
Helpful and helpful, or help. Falling asleep, whatever it is.
Yeah, there's 2,600 people fast asleep worldwide, thanks to Matt and Charlie.
In different time zones. Excellent. Yeah. Okay, so without further ado, we need to introduce our special guests, right? And interview them. We're going to interview them as well. That's going to be a real grilling. Okay, so we've got not one, but two special guests today. So today we are joined by Annie Holden and Tom Burton. Hi, guys.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Annie.
Afternoon, both.
Hi.
Should we ask Annie to do the intro first?
Yes.
Go on, Annie.
Yeah, well, the intro from me is actually one feeling completely under pressure here, given the big build-up that you've given this, and the fact that now we're not just even across active partnerships, but you've done really well. Now global. Well done, guys. That's really, really good. Hi, everyone. Nice to be here. Really pleased to be here, and thank you for inviting me to come on here and collectively do this one with Tom.
And Annie, you're representing the Active Partners Network, aren't you?
Oh yeah, so I sit in the Active Partnership National Team Strategic Health Lead, and try to connect, enable and support across our wider active partnerships.
So thank you. And Tom, you can follow that one.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, no, I'm really delighted to be here. So hello, everyone. Tom Burton, as they've already introduced me. So I work at Sport England in our health and wellbeing team. And I'll probably go into a bit later on about some of the work that I'm involved in, the team's involved with, but predominantly focused around connecting some of our work to place-based partners. So through social prescribing, obviously a lot of work with yourselves and colleagues across the Active Partnership Network and the We Are Undefeatable campaign as well. So yeah, really pleased to be here and have a bit of a chat with you guys about some of this work. But I should say, I've got a four-year-old and I'm going to test this with him. I'm going to play this podcast and see if it affects him, lets him go to sleep. That'd be amazing. Well, I was in my mind, I don't know if you ever come across Tony boxes before. You put little characters on top of a box, it tells a story, and I've just got the vision of a little Matt and Charlie on top.
it would be little systems. If it was me, wouldn't it? God, yeah.
So he'll either fall asleep or he'll create the next generation of geniuses to work in sport, physical activity and health. It's going to go one of two ways.
Completely new lens onto this work.
That's great. Well, welcome both. Thanks for joining us. It's great. And I guess, Chad, we should probably just, for those that don't really know how the system works, we've got 43 active partnerships across the country. And Annie, you work with us to kind of join us together. And we met through a little health steering group, haven't we? There's sort of 7-8 of us that get together to talk around that work to connect physical activity and health and how we can support each other. And Tom, out of the Sport England Health team, is our national body, our leader and driver with some ideas and inspiration. No pressure, Tom, there. But it gives us that national focus, doesn't it? Whereas ours is more of a local county level, Charlie. Nodding on a podcast, helpful.
I still haven't learned. We've done so many episodes, I still haven't learned. I'm totally agreeing with you.
Thanks.
Okay, so should we move into sort of our first question? And I think, Annie, we're coming to you first, because it would be great if you could give a bit of an insight into your role at the Active Partnership Network, and then maybe your perception of the work of the network with health partners, and how it's sort of changed over a time you've been involved.
Yeah, please, I'm happy to. So where are we? So for those who aren't so familiar with Active Partnerships, as you said earlier, Matt, there's 43, sometimes it's 42, sometimes 43 Active Partnerships out there across the country, and all are independent organisations. And I think that's a USP of us, that we're all quite independent, but we all have that collective focus on inactive people and particularly underrepresented groups to improve health. And that's what unites us all in terms of working together there. And I think that the majority of us now have shifted from the direct delivery, as perhaps previously a lot of people used to do, but we're more around the strategic enablers now, you know, that kind of honest broker type approach. And I find that really, really quite inspirational. And because I came from a background, I've only been in Active Partnerships sort of 4 to 5 years. And I have to say, it was pretty new to me. You know, I came from a world of physical activity and health, cardiovascular disease health. And I was, when I came into this world, I thought, my God, this is quite liberating in a way. And it's not to say that we're changing the world today or tomorrow, but collectively, we've got a huge strength and a power there, because we all fundamentally believe in the power of physical activity, full stop, but also to improve health, as we know, and all the challenges that are out there. So working with the Active Partnerships and the independence that each of them bring, but the unique understanding that they all have at that place level, you know, they know their communities, they work with those other senior managers and influencers to really work around the systems that are in place, but absolutely have that contact and that connection into their communities through a cross-sector working as well. So I think that really provides us with a great opportunity. And just over the last year, the work that I've been doing together with you guys that I can see on the screen here today, but remembering this is a podcast, I have to say, with you guys, with Tom, with Matt, with Charlie, and a wider working group of just people like us who said, yeah, we really believe in this space, let's move this on. So we've worked to try to understand what is going on across our own network out there, because there's so much going on out there in the world of activity and health. But we've not been all that connected, have we? We've not been really good at that, I don't think. So that's one of the things that we try to do, is to provide that connection, to share and learn across each other, so that then we can help to then, you know, improve systems, improve at place. And importantly for me as well in my role is to connect with other national organisations. So obviously Sport England being a key one, but the OHID Physical Activity Team, Centre for Ageing Betting, a fair few of those guys who perhaps we come on to a little bit later to explore it a bit further. But for the first time, I actually am hearing conversations and a narrative that's going around, oh, there's active partnerships out there. So there's a huge awareness of active partnerships. And I think they're all quite sure aware of what we're doing yet. And perhaps we need to, that's where we need to be a little bit more connected and to raise awareness. But I do think the tide is changing, maybe on a bit of a watershed. CUSP and all the rest of the, all of those other acronyms and all the metaphors that go on around out there. But I do think we're on a bit of a change here now, because there's an awareness of who we are, what we are, and where we're, what our overarching objective and missions are. But then what do we do? How can we share that more to support each other on this, you know, collaborative journey that we're all on at the moment, just, you know, ideally, just to support each other and importantly to improve the health of the communities that we're working with.
Are we all different, Annie? Are all 40 odd partnerships different, or are you seeing a bit more similarity between us now?
The similarities are that we are all such a, this is going to sound really cheesy, isn't it? You might have to edit this bit out, but we're all very cooperative and very nice. We challenge in the right way, though. That's the other thing. You know, we don't just sit and accept everything. We challenge because we fundamentally believe in what we're doing and we know where the need is within the communities. So there are we're unique in terms of the approaches because of the community needs, because of the localities and that place-based working. So they understand what's needed at a different level within those communities. So that's where it brings out the differences. But collectively, we're a body, a very passionate, very knowledgeable, huge expertise out there. And we also part of that physical activity, exercise workforce. You know, a lot of us are qualified in many different areas, but we're just a bit of the unsung heroes, I think. You know, we don't, I point a finger at ourselves here and say, well, we don't do enough about shouting about it. And that's where, you know, we're an untapped workforce that should absolutely be used to support our health colleagues, NHS, social care, etc., all of those, because we've got that huge area of unique expertise there that we could be using. But active partnerships per se, Matt, I think we're great. It's like, okay.
Yeah, I guess somebody's boss might be listening to this one, Charlie, do you think? Hey, Annie's getting the right lines in. The next question we're going to ask you about the sort of the national conversations and what's kind of going on between Active Partners Network and other national partners, and maybe how that's changed a little bit. So can you give us some insight or gossip? Either works.
Well, oh no, I bet not, no. okay, so as I said, yeah, I hinted at it just a minute ago. I do think, you know, we are on the cusp of a change there. Now, fortunately, this is only podcast and this isn't going to be shown in anywhere, but otherwise any people that know me will know I've been around quite a bit, you know, been around the block quite a few times in the safest possible way, I hasten to add there. But I've constantly come up against challenges and barriers and always been this little bit of, you know, person who's thumping the tub of physical activity for many, many years, particularly in the world of, you know, clinicians, academics, those lovely, lovely people out there. But I'm always just about a bit, don't forget me, don't forget physical activity being part of this. So rather than it being done by stealth now, I think there is an opportunity where people are talking about the role and the benefit of physical activity, but importantly noticing, you know, the dangers and the risks of inactivity and sedentary behaviour. So I think that's really hitting the health agenda. So because of all of that, and because of the obvious pandemic we've been through, the pressure, the crisis that everyone's, you know, at the end of now in terms of from an NHS acute setting, primary care, an ageing population, pressures on social care, that's where I think our health, our national partners are aware now that perhaps there is a role for us to play. There was an NHS roundtable, do stop me if you want me to just, you know, because I will carry on about this forever, but do just jump in. But there was an NHS roundtable meeting on Monday that was organised through NHS Horizons, OHID Physical Activity Team, Sport England. And it was quite reassuring to sit and hear very positive conversations. We're not there yet, but some very positive conversations in terms of, so what does it look like if we do get physical activity in on our agendas? There's always a so what message. You know, we've got that well-established scientific evidence base. We all know, you know, and you can keep reciting it, etc. But what does it actually mean at play? So I think there's a realisation now that it's not just about a typical outcome measure and what does physical activity do from a, you know, from an impact health benefit perspective, but exactly what does it mean in place? What does it mean for that local community? What does it mean for that individual? So those conversations are starting, and at that follow-up meeting, it was like, okay, so how can we do more as active partnerships to present and share the examples of what it actually does mean at place? And that's, you know, incumbent on us all then to have a responsibility to raise awareness about it. But so that's just, you know, a snippet of conversations, but there is certainly an awareness more around active partnerships. In that policy, active partnership turns up. In that presentation, active partnerships are there. And then there's the so what question, isn't there? So what are we going to do about it? How are we going to keep us on this journey? So, but yeah, I think we're on a slight cusp of a change here now.
Yeah, so positive. That's what we need at the end of the year. We need to hear positive messages like that, especially as we start planning for next year and where we're going next. Charlie, I reckon you ought to bring Tom in here.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. So Tom, maybe you can kind of add a layer to what Annie's just saying in terms of that high level sort of national view of how we're starting to connect to health and well-being. And if you want to sort of share some of the objectives for Sport England and your system partners in that space.
Yeah, thank you. And I was actually just reflecting and listening to Annie, and before I do that, just listening to some of Annie's points there. And a few of them just really struck me, and it does go to show how far we have come. And I think it's also up to us in the conversations we're in Sport England to really bang the drum for active partnerships. I think we've been doing that, but I think as we go forward with this agenda, there's an opportunity to do that even more. But definite progress, huge progress been made over the last few years. So yeah, so health and wellbeing and Sport England. So we are a health, probably the place to start is we are a health team amongst many teams and directorates within Sport England. We currently sit within a directorate called Policy and Integrity. And it's quite intentional that, because I think there's a real opportunity to influence some of that national policy, national change, systems, white papers, whatever it needs to really instigate change. Is an opportunity for us to try and listen and understand what that change could and should look like. And a lot of that is listening to you guys, you know, is being involved in those conversations. And I think we're in a fortunate position where we want to be able to escalate some of that and actually make sure that those messages, those challenges, those opportunities are filtered through to the right places, the right organisations, and, you know, really form the basis for some really good discussion. So I'm hoping that most people listening in, even in Australia, may have come across the Uniting the Movement strategy. So really, I think in all of my time and years being involved in sort of sport, physical activity and health, I think it's the most exciting direction of travel that Sport England, particularly in the sector's had. And it was published, I'm going to say the beginning of last year. I'm going to get my wrist slapped for not knowing that out the back of my hand, but I think it was towards the beginning of 2021. And that was off the back of a fairly long process of intensive and comprehensive collaboration with hearing and listening to people across the sector and different organisations, different voices. And what came out of all of that was this piece around the importance that people were placing on the role that physical activity does, but could do more of in terms of integration in health and well-being. It was identified as one of the big issues, five big issues, and I won't go into all the others now, but that's huge progress in itself, because we've kind of gone from this, look, we recognise it plays a role with the sport, with the government strategy and Sporting Futures. We know there's a real role in the evidence base around physical and mental health, for instance. But never before have we had this level of energy and momentum and collective will behind this agenda, kind of going, you know, we know there's a role here. There's some great evidence that's emerging. There's some really good practice that's been built over the last 3 or 4 years, as Annie's kind of alluded to. This could go so much further. And so part of what Uniting the Movement is a 10-year vision to kind of say, central to that, one of the central themes is what more can we do to position physical activity as core to the nation's health and well-being. And it's kind of been split into two parts, really. One is around how do we make physical activity really accessible and inclusive for all, supporting them people to live longer, healthier, happier lives for everyone, and it being sort of an integral part of that, the social norms of our society. But there's also this increasingly important part is it doesn't work for everyone, you know, based on your postcode, based on your circumstances, based on where you're born, from one road to another, your opportunities are different. And your feelings of capability, of opportunity, your motivation to be active is very, very different. And therefore, there's a lot of work to do to ensure that those communities, those individuals do feel it's something that is accessible, that there are opportunities and it is part of them and their lives. And there's all sorts of reasons. And that's why tackling inequalities, I guess, is at the heart of Uniting the Movement. That's what makes it so exciting for me. And I know for many partners that are supportive of that, is actually this is about, in order to tackle inactivity, which we've been trying to do for years, you can't do that without considering these wider determinants and the impacts on people's lives, which are really complex and wide ranging and very individual for many people. And therefore, this, what it does, I think, is places it, Uniting the Movement really starts to pull partners together. It creates a shared vision, a shared purpose to really get behind. And we're starting to see that. And even since the beginning of last year, we're starting to see this much more overt focus around what does it really mean to tackle inequalities when we're talking about sport and physical activity. And so our team, I guess, and now increasingly the whole organisation, the whole Sport England, are going to have a focus on health and wellbeing, you know, ensuring that physical activity is a core part of supporting people's health and well-being, and that's kind of nationally where the direction of travel is.
That probably I've got two things about one, like if Sport England, Unite the Movement sit in the middle, you've almost got to push up, aren't you, to politicians, anyone that listen, to say, look, physical activity should be here, and then you've got to look to the residents as well and be going, we've got to convince you as well. So that middle ground, which way do you think you're closer now to? We think there's more impact at the top to get that buy-in, understanding, and it's more work to be doing the residents, or are we still, well, where are we?
Well, I think you need both. I think we've always needed both. I think some colleagues across the network, I think it was down in Somerset, and Jane often talks about it as a pincer movement, which sounds a bit, always sounds a bit sinister. I hope Jane doesn't mind me saying this, but she's absolutely bang on in terms of if you really want to change behaviour, not just of individuals, but of organisations and how they operate and how they think. It's not just through any one means of conversations. You might be lucky, you might get someone that's really bought into physical activity, you know, that it's ingrained into their lives as a healthcare professional, as a commissioner, whatever it might be, and you might get that. But generally, it tends to need to be, physical activity needs to be an identified and actionable piece in policy, and therefore the value of it needs to be recognised, and there needs to be some tangible ways to bring that to life. But you also need that those local relationships. And you need to ensure that, what we're doing is being informed by the people and the communities we most want to serve. I mean, one of the things that I think really was stark for me in some recent conversations, well, probably over the last 12 months, is this concept of, do we have an empathy gap? And it's probably something that will be, as professionals really trying to support communities and individuals to be active, do we have an empathy? Do we really understand those lives? Do we really understand what those, some of those barriers, challenges are, or what those opportunities are? And I think we've started to talk a lot more now about genuine co-design, co-production with those communities, with those individuals, and really bring them into helping to shape the services that are going to support them. But to do that, you often need it. You need that approach being identified within some national policy work as well. Mm. So there's something about how these two work in sync that feels not just, I think, what's needed, but is where there's still more work to do. I think we're getting there. So I think Sport England, we are trying to do as much as we can, particularly working with the Active Partnership Network, to try and get that balance right. And I think we're on the right trajectory, but I think there's still a lot more to do to genuinely go to elevate or escalate what some of those, where does there need to be national change? Where does there need to be national conversation? And who are those organisations that need to be influenced? And those asks, if you like, to those organisations need to be based on a lot of the time what we're hearing and what's happening in place, you know, and with those communities and with those people.
And do you think we really want to know the answers, Tom? And I ask that because I think the empathy gap, I think that's one thing. And do we really know? Do we really understand? And I think the network's doing an awful lot of work to try to understand some of the complexities around inequality and why some people might find many more challenges to moving than others. But do you think how will the system respond when we find those answers? Because some of those are going to be difficult and possibly more difficult in the financial climate. It might come down to funding models. It might come down to commissioning. It might come down to more structural processes that drive inequalities. And they're going to be long-term, stubborn, hard things. There's always going to be a lot of resistance to changing the way things are done because it suits some better than others. Do you think we're ready for the answers, Tom?
I mean, it's a great question. I'm going to shift that in true politician style. I'm going to say, well, because I think there's a recognition that we need to understand more about, and we are never going to see a step change unless we face those challenges and those genuine sort of societal and inequality driven challenges. So I think there's an appetite to understand them. I think it's, are we ready for them? I think it's a really good question. I'm not sure I know the answer. I think it depends who you talk to. I think you might say, actually, some national partners I feel quite detached from some of what those challenges genuinely are. And I think we need to understand and go, what does it mean for you as an organisation? What does it mean for your organisation? What does it mean for how we work together as a system? So I don't think it's not for any one organisation to. So that it's very careful how we frame some of this, because I think this, for me, it's is about who are the organisations and the levers and the enablers that can actually unlock some of this stuff. It's not about. And I do recognise, I think it's going to take a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And the problem is we often work in funding cycles and we often work in political cycles where you need to be able to demonstrate change or impact very, very quickly. And some of what you've just talked about is a longer term, can often feel, you know, change what happens at the pace of trust, we often say quite a lot. And building that trust takes a lot of time. So I think it's probably a roundabout answer, but I think there's an appetite to know those to understand those challenges. And I think people and organisations need to know, what does it mean for me and what's the role I can play in supporting that. That takes a lot of time to unpick, I think, and go through some of that. So, but I think it's the right question to be asking.
Yeah, I think it feels different for me because I think now we have more connection, I would say, locally in a place, but also nationally, looking at both of your roles and your organisation's roles, Annie and Tom, is that we're possibly now more connected to the organisations that have a role to play in trying to help us solve some of this, trying to connect the issues together and trying to make some of the change, whereas perhaps years ago we didn't have those connections and those levers. We've now got lines of communication.
Yeah. Would two examples of them, Charlie, be NHS England and NHS Horizons maybe? Seamlessly smoothing into the next question. See what I did there? Yeah. So Tom, just tell us a little bit about NHSE and NHS Horizon, how that links to what we do and people like me in my role.
Absolutely. Well, I guess NHS, NHS England, I guess, is everyone listening will be familiar with who they are and what they do. They're a huge, vast, complex organization, many different parts of the NHS, and physical activity potentially and does have a role to play across many of those teams. And so we know that there's a significant amount of trust between the NHS and often many of the communities and the individuals we want to support. And we know that where there might be some more significant challenges or perceptions of challenges to be active. And so there's a real opportunity and a necessity, I would probably go a step further, to ensure that physical activity is valued by people working across the NHS at all levels. It's happening in patches, I would say, from what we're seeing. It's kind of the momentum we've made over the last few years. It's definitely happening in patches. There's been a concerted effort around frontline healthcare professionals through the Moving Healthcare Professionals program, which has had a number of strands to it, which I won't go through all now. But a big part of that is ensuring more of those frontline healthcare professionals do understand the evidence around being active, some of the risks involved in that, how you might build physical activity into routine care and routine conversations and dialogue with patients. But that can only work if it's aligned with those local relationships. So, you know, that program is a national program that's rolled out locally, if you like. But really, for it to tick, you don't want to just walk away from that, from supporting healthcare professionals. It's the so what? And that's where there's an opportunity for active partnerships and the like to get involved in that. So I think because of that energy and that momentum over the last few years, we recognise there's a, you know, that we've made a lot of progress collectively between sort of local and national partners. But this is, there's a lot more to do. And I think that's probably over the next 2 to 3 years going to be, excuse me, one of the focus areas. Is how do we continue to influence people across the NHS and social care, I should add, but particularly the NHS, where there's been that momentum and energy, so that it does become not a nice to do and feeling a bit fluffy, but actually there's some really hard and fast evidence, particularly that lines to some of the emerging NHS priorities like we see through Core 20+5, the health inequalities framework that particularly many integrated care systems are using. You know, what is the evidence of physical activity against that? That's going to drive behaviour and drive change, particularly at that level. What is the role of physical activity? And we need to continue to find those disruptors. We need to find those champions for this work, and those positive disruptors, I should say, that can genuinely support and challenge, if necessary, their peers around the role that physical activity can play. And so where NHS Horizon, so that's kind of NHS England and where we know we need to go. And we know there's relationships between NHS England and integrated care systems, of course. And we've then got NHS Horizons, who we've been working with as part of our relationship with OHID, the Office for Health Improvement and Disparities, previously Public Health England. The relationship we've had with OHID, they have been driving a lot of the Moving Healthcare Professionals program, working, and we've brought NHS Horizons into the picture, who have got a really strong track record of instigating, making the case for and supporting system change across the NHS, particularly across NHS England. And so, you know, really looking at, okay, what's the problem? What's some of the solutions to that? What needs to change across? What are the current barriers and challenges across the NHS systems that are limiting that? And how do we start to put some solutions in place to overcome some of that? And so physical activity being the driver for some of their work, you know, they've got some real expertise around and understanding around the complexity of the NHS, how it works, where some of those opportunities might be. And they're starting to make some sense over what a roadmap might look like to influencing some of those teams, those parts of the NHS. And a big part of that is recognizing that and even colleagues across the NHS would say this, there's not always that synergy across different teams. You can talk about personalized care, health inequalities, prevention, and a number of other teams, you know, at an NHS England level, where physical activity could play a much more significant golden thread throughout their work. And we're starting to, through some of the programs, social prescribing particularly, we're starting to see physical activity appear a lot more in that in those discussions and in those prioritization processes and things like that. So it's I wouldn't call it a slow burn, but it's obviously not quick, something that happens overnight.
No.
But that's where NHS Horizons are helping us navigate that. And a big part of what they're going to be doing is not just the national work, but is helping pull together some of this work that's happening locally that we're obviously working on to try and like weave these and knit these things together.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, and it's interesting stuff. And obviously when people like me start in an active partnership and we're desperately trying to find those local connections, I guess there's a bit of a sort of building it from what is immediate and relevant and important to you right now, you know, survival instinct maybe. So to hear you talk about things that are probably several steps away from kind of that local level that I'm talking about, it's reassuring to hear that there's almost a wave of things happening elsewhere. I'm gesticulating again on a podcast. Look, I'm bad as you, Charlie.
We can see you, Matt. You're right.
Yeah, thanks. But that idea that there's something else is coming, and there's a wave of this physical activity message, that's really kind of quite inspiring, really. It makes you feel like, oh, we can keep going here. It's coming. Because I think, well, we talked about in the last one, which I was one before, about how we are batting above our weight as active partnerships often. We are 12, 13 people at Active Lincolnshire trying to influence a system that's 37,000 strong, I think it is, in Lincolnshire. So that kind of, we're at the bottom end, we're pushing, and there's something coming. it's when it meets in the middle that's going to be quite exciting, I think, isn't it? What are you going to say, Julie?
Only that reflection of that sort of systemic change that's happening at a national level is really positive to hear, because I think you always worry that it's going to get washed away in a different strategy or a different political cycle, as you said, Tom, or a different funding cycle even. But actually to hear that there's systemic change happening at the top that embeds physical activity in some of these connections and priorities, and it's also hopefully happening in places where we know it is through the work of active partnerships together with their local systems, so that actually at some point, yeah, Matt, we should meet in the middle, shouldn't we?
I think Rebecca called it the messy middle, didn't she?
The messy middle.
So yeah, that messy middle is getting swamped.
I mean, I think what feels really important to me is that they're not two disparate things that happen to me in the middle, that actually there's a conscious piece around where is that overlap? And I think, coming back to my earlier point, I think there's something about the work that NHS Horizons are doing with OHID support, with our support, another national, the Richmond Group of Charities, another one coming in around, where we've got this really strong coalition of, you know, allies really in this space, is that actually there's a real need to understand those challenges on the ground. There's needs to understand where there's really good practice and share that. There's a really good, you know, and I think how we synthesize all of this, because we get patchy examples of where there's really good practice. I think what we need to get better at is pulling together and really understanding where there is that learning from a number of areas. What's it telling us? What does that mean that NHS England need to do differently or might need to do in addition? Or is it reinforcing there's really good work happening nationally? And I think for me, there's a real need to continue to do that, to learn from local and ensure that influences and informs national. And, you know, likewise, often there are things that drop, appearing like it drops out of the ether and it feels top down. But often that's the way, you know, when some policy and other things work, you know, things do happen nationally. How do we make the most of that? And how do we ensure that it does align with what we're doing locally? So I think there's more for us to do, but it feels exciting.
I'm excited. It's not just a Christmas feeling either. I guess that pulls us on nicely to looking forwards and being Christmassy. Annie, I'm going to come to you first. That's right. If you're thinking ahead, New Year's resolutions. You can do your own if you want, Annie. But what would be the New Year's resolution you would suggest for active partnerships in connecting with health, the Kitchen Health and Wellbeing agenda?
Listening to the conversation that's been going on over these last few minutes, really good conversations, and listening to Tom again as well. And, you know, we are all in the same place together in terms of, you know, our fundamental beliefs and passion, etc. And we have a whole heap of opportunities. I do fundamentally believe that. And sometimes I can be the most cynical, having worked in this space for a good long while. But I do think there's lots of positivity out there. Not to say there aren't the challenges, going back to what, you know, Charlie picked up on for, you know, do we want to hear this and how are we moving together? I think we've all got an obligation to move on now, because we've got more than an opportunity. And it's if we as active partnerships can be bold and stand up a little bit more now as well. I think it's, you know, I talked about doing things by stealth previously. Well, we can get over that now. There is a recognition that active partnerships as a workforce, as a force out there amongst place, collectively can really contribute and support national. And I've always talked about, let's readdress this balance, let's stop this hierarchical approach of national to, like, you know, let's address that. And I'm doing the gesticulation myself here, Matt, now. I put my hands down and then realize I've got to verbalize it a little bit more, that we stop the hierarchical approach, we have more of a horizontal relationship now, so that then the active partnerships can inform national and national can support local. And then you use us, exploit us in the nicest possible way, and put your hands up as active partnerships. Be bold in the new year and say, we are a small workforce in particular areas, you know, in a national team and in the local teams out there. But there's a whole force of collective passion and knowledge and expertise there, who also then fundamentally and critically know their communities, you know, and work across their sectors, the whole relationship building that they do, they're all the influencing, far more beneficial. And from a future-proofing perspective, there's so much more opportunity there than just having that transactional relationship, which a lot of us have been part of, you know, over the years, short-fixed, bit of money there, go and do that. And no money to evaluate, by the way, so we can't contribute to the overall local learning evidence base. That's always been a challenge. But if we now look at what we're doing in this very positive space, working across systems, it's the only way we know that for the sake of the individuals and our communities, we're going to have that fundamental change. We know, but we've got to also then, not convince, but use perhaps different methods of convincing our perhaps our health partners, social care, of the benefits of physical activity, you know, because we know it, you know, that exercise is a miracle cure, et cetera, et cetera. We know that, but it's not just about saying that now, is it? It's about showing our place, the impact that it's had. So yeah, I think my message to our colleagues across the network is let's be bold. I think my a professional New Year's resolution for myself would be to say, let's raise the profile and the credibility of our workforce and get it recognised as an allied health professional, whatever else it is. You know, we've never been in that space, never been recognised there. So I think we've got an opportunity to do that and so much more. So let's all be bold collectively. And yeah, maybe go for the low hanging fruit, maybe take those opportunities. But where we can work collectively and have that impact, then let's go for it.
Be bold, just like your big fish, little fish cardboard box just then, for those that didn't hear. Some great gesticulating, Annie, thank you. Tom, New Year's resolution for the partnerships and for the Sport England, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know if it's New Year's resolution? It's definitely an area of focus, I think. There's a couple of things. I think this piece around risk comes up a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, the consensus statement in a way has opened a can that needed to be opened around this, decision making that's often driven by risk, both by commissioners, policymakers, healthcare professionals, frontline workforce, individuals themselves with health conditions, you know, for fear of this fear of exacerbating symptoms or someone's condition really is driving decision making. So I think there's something in the new year that around starting to really think through how do we unpick that? Where's the starting point for a lot of that? And that's, you know, obviously a lot of active partnerships have already started to think about that. You know, what do I do with the consensus statement? What are the conversations it can? So there's definitely something I would say about continuing that conversation about what needs to happen around risk. And again, what can happen locally versus what can happen nationally? And how can we get that blend right? And I think there's a real moment in time around mental health, and there continues to be. You know, not just because off the back of the pandemic, but I think it's really in the nation's consciousness at the moment, more so open conversations than we've ever known before. And so there's definitely something that inherent to that conversation's got to be being active, you know, not just in terms of people's well-being, but in terms of the management of, you know, if there is a mental health challenge. So I think there's something around, you know, we are the champions, we are advocates for this. And I think the best thing we can do is speak with passion about it, like we all have done today, having that clear shared focus, which we've got. And I think it is starting to, and I think it's shouting about the progress we're making, which I think you guys have kind of started to do with this podcast. We're not very good at shouting about some of the stuff we do, stepping forward and going, look what we've achieved, and some of this stuff. And I think it's a real opportunity to do that. So if Sport England as a New Year's resolution can do more to drive a lot of that and enable people to talk about this stuff, then that would be brilliant. So that's something, I guess, a personal pledge from me.
Thanks, Tom. Oh, Annie, you want to come back in, dear?
Yeah, I'm just raising my little hand in the non-visual part of this podcast here. But yeah, just to say, my message back to the national organisations and Tom, your Sport England and others, is just to say, use us more. You know, as active partnerships, yeah, we're the agile ones. We're not, most of us aren't wrapped up in red tape and bureaucracy, which I know for all the best reasons national organisations may have to. But that's where, you know, we are agile, we are flexible, we can make things happen. And so I suppose I don't know if it's a New Year's resolution, but, you know, an offer out there to national,
it sounds like an appeal, Annie. It's, you know,
use us and abuse us in the very nicest possible way.
Lovely. Like it. Charlie.
Okay, I've got two. The first one's a mini one then. It's New Year's resolution for active partnerships or anyone working in an NHS system. Come on the podcast, use it as your way to tell people what you're doing. So what Tom was saying, we need people to share the work they're doing, the great stuff they're doing, the challenges they're facing. Use it as a space to share some of that, because there's always somebody else facing similar challenges to you. So come on the podcast, tell us what you've done, tell us what work you're doing. And my second one is around measurement. And I've been having lots of conversations about measurement. A lot of the ICS and new developing ICBs, integrated care boards, are starting to be asked about measurement. And we had NHS England down looking at some of the outpatient assessment centres, and we were talking about how we've worked with our NHS partners to embed lifestyle conversations as part of the patient journey. And they said, great, how do you know it's working? And we said, well, we're collecting some data on people attending, but we haven't been able to change the NHS system, so we're collecting it as part of patient records. And the truth is, until we do that, we can't really tell them if it's making changes for the NHS system. And that is my New Year's resolution, is I'm going to keep talking about this issue that nobody really wants to tell me how to answer it, because I don't think anybody knows. It's a difficult one, but we are going to be sat here in 10 years' time and we're going to be asked, okay, you've spent all this money on trying to embed physical activity in healthcare systems, what has it achieved? And at the moment, we can't tell them. We can tell them some nice stories, but we need some numbers to tell them about the money and the value for money. So I'm going to still be battering on in 2023 about this. Tom, you wanted to come in.
Yeah, I just think actually that is a critically important point, Charlie. And I think that's something NHS has come up a lot through the NHS England roundtables, with the work with NHS Horizons. This piece around, look, we know the evidence is there for physical activity. We're not short of it. But there's a disconnect, isn't there, and between the evidence is there and actually it landing in a way that feels actionable by NHS colleagues. But there's something about, it's either how we're framing it, or it's something around the data that we're collecting for the interventions we're delivering. All of that's got to play into, I think, this. That is a massive opportunity around consistently measuring what we do in a way that really speaks to NHS priorities and contributes in that way to population health management is really important.
And how we work with our NHS partners to do it. They do a great job of asking about smoking. Can we ask about physical activity? Just can we ask them, come up with some simple questions where we can ask our NHS colleagues, just ask about physical activity. Let's record it somewhere on your system. Let's make that change. I know IT is a difficult thing, patient records, difficult thing, but we like doing difficult stuff. That's why we're here. That's how change happens. So let's get those people into that space and have that conversation about how do we measure physical activity consistently.
I've well up for that challenge. And I think the coffee's just kicked in, Matt. Sorry, because a couple of other things come into my mind. This thing about data, though, and I know, but is actually what we learn a lot of the time is there is physical activity itself plays a really valuable part of supporting people's well-being and improving their quality of life and the rest of it, but often it's the cumulative impact of a number of different services that will impact upon someone's touch points with the NHS or improve their mental well-being or whatever it might be. So there's definitely a very critical and key role that physical activity plays, and sometimes a pathway, physical activity pathway, supports people in that way, and we know it does. But it's recognizing it's part of the bigger, you know, actually it's the cumulative impact we see on individuals sometimes. And so how we get the data right within that context, I think, is really important. So we are playing a very important contributing point, a part of that. You know, for some people, it will just be about physical activity. For others, it's part of a wider set of services and offers locally that does that. So I think getting that right is something I think we need to tackle head on, really. That's me done, Matt. Sorry.
Well, follow that, eh? Well, I'll tell you what, I'll go for an easy one. My New Year's resolution is, if by the sounds of it, Charlie, we're doing some more podcasts, I'm going to try and keep people to time, because we are well over yet again. I don't think we've done one in the time frame that we've set out yet, have we? So that'll be mine. I'm going to try and do better at keeping people to time on a podcast. So there we go. But just to recap there, I think there's been some great discussion there. Thank you ever so much for joining us. Three sort of summary points for me, about one about connections and that shift from direct delivery into more strategic enablers of the work and the connection, and really trying to support each other as a network, whether that's within the active partnerships or with our health partners. The second one around banging the drum, physical activity is the core to X, Y, Z, whatever, but actually not just banging the drum, but actually measuring how we're banging the drum and what the impact of the drum banging is. And then that Pinter movement really stuck out for me. Things like the consensus statement, being brave that Annie mentioned earlier, and having a go to try and make sure we've got a Pinter movement to get physical activity really wrapped into our communities and our places that we're working with. Is that, are we happy with that? Is that a good three? And I haven't
Excellent
broken a
summary.
Pencil. I haven't broken a pencil, and we're good to go. We're good to go. So I guess that's it, isn't it? Happy New Year. Favourite Christmas film, Charlie?
Ooh, I think I'm going with Nativity. It's really childish, but how can you not like that? That's a family film, and it is hilarious.
It's an all-time classic of Elf for me.
Elf. Matt. Yeah, Annie?
I couldn't choose one. And Elf was one that I've not seen before, I have to say, Tom, but I did watch it, unashamedly, the other day.
I think.
Come on then, Matt, what's yours?
The Holiday.
Don't say Die Hard.
No. But no, not Die. No, The Holiday, Love Actually. Get me on the chick flicks. Love it. Love it.
I'll come join you, Matt, if that's all right with those.
Yes, Tom. You're welcome anytime, mate. Bring your tissues because it's an emotional one. Love it. But after listening to you guys, I feel like watching Braveheart. I feel really pumped and ready for what's going to be a fantastic year next year, no doubt. So we'll end there, shall we, Charlie?
Yeah. Good
Merry
place
Christmas.
To end. Thanks.
Happy New Year,
Happy
mate.
Happy Christmas, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks guys.
Very much. Have a good Christmas.
Cheers. Bye now.
Bye.